Okay, so let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, June 23rd, 2016. First item of business is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion?
I move the agenda be approved. Yes.
Second? So we have a motion by...
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anyway.
Dick Ryan, and a second by Commissioner Miller. Any changes? Okay, all those in favor of tonight's agenda say aye.
Aye.
The agenda is approved and is unanimous. Next item of business is to approve the minutes for the June 9th, 2016 minutes. Do I have a motion? And a second?
Second.
So I have a motion by Commissioner Miller and a second by Commissioner Ryan. Any comments or changes? Okay, all those in favor of approving June 9th, 2016 minutes, say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved and unanimous. Public comment on non-agenda items. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to comment on a non-agenda item this evening? Seeing none, we will go ahead to new item number four, which is Cottage Residential Zoning District, an update on the council input and vision regarding cottage residential municipal code amendments. Ms. Easton.
Thank you, Gary. What you have in your packet is really just an overview of pretty much the same material that the council had at their last work study. So in brief, what has occurred in the world of cottage housing at the council level is in February they did adopt a moratorium on new applications in the cottage zone. And the cottage zone is the orange parcels on the zoning map behind us. So predominantly between Cedar Falls and North Bend Way. Then they've held, three or four work studies on the topic and kind of fleshed out what it is their vision for cottage housing. They had actually we were able to convince Linda Pruitt, who owns the cottage company, to come out for a night to share with them cottage housing from her perspective.
And where have they built?
They have built in quite a few locations, and actually a lot of the material in your packet is theirs. They've built in Kirkland, Silverdale,
is that their,
Redmond.
Their buildings are what they have in examples.
Yes. We have a few others in there, but
and did council member Pedersen bring their name up at a council meeting saying that they were awarded something? Is that the same company?
I don't know if I heard that comment, so I'm not sure what they are.
She mentioned one company that did cottage homes and was awarded something.
It's
to bring them out.
Yeah, it's probably that company. They are definitely considered in the true cottage world. They're doing a very good job bringing a product to market. It is their product, so everybody has every builder has a different opinion of whether it's where that stands. But they have built some pretty successful cottage developments in Kirkland, and there's Langley and Silverdale and Redmond. If you actually go to their website, they have a nice little website. You can kind of scroll through all the communities. So the one thing that through the discussion with Linda Pruitt with the cottage company, she really talked with the council about this concept of they called it the missing middle. And it's basically housing types for the market that is looking to buy a cottage. And it's not the aspirational buyer. And what that means is a young couple who has plans to start a family and wants to grow into a house. It's a lot of times it's a single woman, a downsizing couple. it wasn't even a single, there were a few single new buyers, like young new buyers, but predominantly it was the downsizing or, you know, a well-educated single person was kind of articulated as in the, in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and on. But, you know, we're, basically what's not in there is that young family or the aspirational buyer.
That's surprising to me. It seems to me that's where you'd start as a young family, is in a cottage, build equity and move forward.
I think that would be true if these cottages were extremely, I think, affordable. I think people, when you're buying your first house, sometimes you buy what you can afford. The cottage company builds pretty nice, the finish work is pretty good. So, like, they're not on the affordable spectrum in the realm of what we call affordable.
The name is misleading to me.
Yeah, they are high-end, well-designed, homes that are. So I think for aspirational or a new family, they probably find equal in a larger home.
That helps me a little bit, because yeah, I looked up Danielson Grove in Kirkland, and one just sold, and it's $600,000.
Yeah, so, yeah. So $600,000.
Like, is it smaller and kind of rural and? A community based, or is it affordable? It seems like you can't get both really anyway, because it's new construction. So
yeah.
When you talk about the missing middle, can you elaborate on that? Are you talking in housing stock where you have condos, you have single family homes, you have high density, but there's no real like small lot development, or you know what is it? Besides in housing stock.
Mm-hmm. The missing middle housing stock is all of those, from brownstones to townhomes to just kind of the alternative choice to a single family home for people that are either looking to downsize or maybe looking to have still a townhome of the same 2,500 square foot, but maybe high-end finish work or something like that. So when the council considered this issue, I'll forward you a article on the missing middle, and it's kind of a good read. So I'll just kind of forward that as a follow-up. So between now and our next meeting. You guys can kind of take a look at that. Let me make a note. So the city council had a few meetings on this topic and talked about where our zone was. One thing that the cottage company. And, you know, I really don't want to just focus on one company because this is a zone. But one thing this person said that is very relevant in the realm of understanding the market is she feels that the cottage style home is really successful when you're in a 10-minute walk distance to what she calls meaningful commercial. Okay. And I agree with that too, you know. So what we did is we kind of, and in every other city that I, you know, most cities, I'd say, like Kirkland, Federal Way, some of the other codes we looked at, address cottage housing as an infill development, not a zone. So, for example, Kirkland says, this is your low density residential zone of, you know, minimum lot sizes, let's say 7,500 square feet. In that zone, you could do a cottage development up to 12 or, you know, a cluster of 12 units, and you get two times the density allowed in the single family zone. But then they have spatial requirements that say, okay, if you do a cottage development here, you can't do another one for X amount of feet. So one thing the council talked about was, well, we have this as a zone. So one challenge as a city planner that I've been trying to ponder when hearing the council's desires to, I mean, this all kind of came about with their visioning exercise to analyze how we could still grow yet stay rural in nature, keep our small town atmosphere, but allow growth. And this particular area of town is actually quite well treed. It does have right now a very rural character, and if it was developed with cottages and as a zone wide, you know, there would be a definite change to the character of that corridor big time. So so the council talked about zone versus infill. And we did kind of consider the conversation of the 10-minute walk and where we do allow cottages in downtown, and we do right now allow it in the LDR. What we don't do in the LDR is actually do what Kirkland does, which is say you get 2 times the density, which incentivizes it or at least makes it pencil. We actually require it to be the same density, so it doesn't. It's not happening. So anyway, long story short, the council has felt they want to keep a zone. I think there is a reality that, and I'll just walk you through the situation that we are. Because one thing we want to keep in mind is we're not talking about big space. This is a church, not looking probably for seeing any change there for a while. This is a platted polygon subdivision that is vested, and so this is the John Day cottages. So really the only lots that you're even looking to potentially see some activity in the next 5 to 10 years is that one, which I actually don't see that one because that person, I think, bought it more to, he hadn't pursued any development. So we're really focusing between this window. There's about 19 parcels here. And when you leave, and between now and the next meeting, kind of drive down Stilson just in this one little corridor. And it's actually, there's 4 homes on this side, and they're actually really nice. They're pretty well landscaped. They don't look like they're prime for redevelopment. Who knows? Because whenever I say that, of course, the next day I get an application. But I did go through and look at some of those, and we're talking 90s, you know, maybe 80s, 90s. Well, you know, nice larger homes that clearly not some of the older ones that maybe are prime for tear down or reinvestment there. So those might be lagging a little behind the ones. So we're really talking about, 7 to 8 parcels.
Are any of them just vacant land?
There's a couple of vacant land, and there's a couple that have a small house on 2 to 5 acres. So what the council did, yeah.
So just thinking about that's where it's zone cottage,
yeah.
But there's still a percentage of LDR which can be cottage, right? It's 10% or 5% of that.
In the LDR.
That's okay. I'm trying to think in my head, if we're going to write rules, my end question is, these would be rules for cottages no matter what zone the cottage is built in, correct? Mm-hmm. Or would you take LDR and say, in the LDR zone, we could then say higher density for cottage, however it has to be spaced
That's a good
similar
question.
To what Kirkland does. I'm just trying to figure out how are we going to arrive at a comprehensive code so it's compatible with whether you're in the zone or you're building it outside that zone where it's permitted.
Yeah, and that's going to be, there is going to be a lot of, like...
So just so the Planning Commission, it's in LDR, it's in downtown core...
Mm-hmm, commercial.
And Where else?
Cottage is allowed in the neighborhood business. Yeah.
So it can be prevalent in more places, and that's why I think it's meaningful to just be aware.
Yeah.
Why we should, I think infill plays a bigger role in those zones than a large development in those 5-10 acre lots.
Right. And so right now we're still in the brainstorming, visioning. We have one more council meeting, and then I'm hoping to get their final direction. And then I'm going to start doing the work that you just talked about. What I do think makes most sense is I think we're just going to create a cottage residential chapter. And so in that chapter, it may say for cottages built within the LDR zone, mm-hmm. boom. For cottages built in, you know, so there might be some different parameters, but you'll go to a section of the code and it will all be one-stop shop for cottages there. So, you know, kind of coming back to infill versus zone, you know, and the 10-minute walk radius. The one thing that's interesting about North Bend is we are really a true little mountain city in the realm of we have a flat valley floor with the mountains are all around us. So with Tanner Trail, we do have an opportunity. We laid out a 10-minute walk as a crow flies. I know, isn't that funny? Which is about a quarter mile is what we are, you know, quarter, half mile. And it really doesn't get you very far. It barely gets you to that little start of the zone on Cedar Falls Way. But we do think in North Bend, because we do have Tanner Trail.
There is blue right across the street.
And so. You're already there. Because some people were thinking about now, and we do really see that Mount Si Boulevard hopefully redeveloping more in, you know, in a way that would support that little area as a little commercial node for, you know, whether it's a coffee shop or what have you. So moving kind of to where the council is, because this is really I'm still kind of collecting their thoughts and inputs before we put time into code writing. They did really like the way Kirkland wrote this code, and it's been tested.
Can I ask mm-hmm. who else did they look at? In comparison.
Yeah.
Because there was Shoreline, Langley.
Federal Way has some provisions. In the end, what I've kind of done is take a little bit, I'm kind of getting ahead of it, so I'm anticipating that I know where we're going to go. And, like, Federal Way has some good provisions. Right now, I can't remember off the top, but I think, like, Shoreline has some pretty good provisions, but she really had more. It was almost like Kirkland had refined it all. The other ones had kind of started out trying to hit it. And I don't know the history of whether Kirkland amended theirs or what have you, but it sounds like it really pencils for what she builds, which is that small product.
I just appreciate that because when I go and look at other codes, it helps me whether to spend time or not.
Yeah. And when we bring kind of the actual proposal or the next steps to you guys, which might be some code provisions, you know, we can give you some more of the details of there has been four council meetings that, you know, we'll probably bring whatever other details you want, if it's another example code or what have you, or maybe just a summary of where we're thinking we're taking some of the good examples and melding them. But I think from what I've heard, the council, their missing middle is a mixture of single family, duplex, triplex, and cottages. which is basically what we have now. Our code right now really isn't that far off from where we're going to a certain degree. And I want to say that because our code is actually, the houses are larger than what most people consider a cottage. Kirkland sets theirs at 1,500, and that's where our council is feeling comfortable at a cottage. Right now ours is 1,700, excluding the garage, and we allow a two-car garage. In North Bend, we don't have an 800.
The one in Kirkland was 1,000. So.
Kirkland has there's different like parking requirements for an 800 square foot or 1,000. So that might have been where you read that particular one. Yeah. So.
Our cottages are going to be around 17.
1,500 and below would be
that's a good size.
Yeah. So the Kirkland code definitely in the cottage would anticipates cottages to be clustered around a green. The council had a little conversation on whether they saw the need to, like in this code, surface parking is allowed and attached garages are not required, or we do have a lot of rain out here. There was some discussion on, well, that's kind of important, but the input that Linda Pruitt had given the council was that, you know, really making sure the homes are fronting a green and you really take that vehicular impact away from the intimacy of the cottage clustering idea.
That was more buyer-friendly? Is that what it is? Or who was attracted to that, I guess?
I think that's part... I think it's...
Aesthetically, for that type of buyer, that's what they're looking
for. Yeah, yeah. And just the intimacy of the cottage, and you're sharing a lot of space, because Kirkland does have a private space, but then you're sharing a little clubhouse, and it's more of a shared mentality.
I'm a guy and I love my garage, is all I can say.
It would come from having the garages detached from the house in a separate parking area where they'd have to walk to their residence rather than having it attached to their house.
Yeah. There's
a 60-year-old carrying groceries.
And there's both. I mean, it's envisioned that we will allow both as we work through this. It's just one thing I think we're going to have to think about, right? And there are the detached clustered garages of 4 or 5 bays with a carriage unit above. They have that. So it really is a unique opportunity to provide an interesting mix. Keeping a code flexible and just making sure we set those boundary or those parameters at the bottom, so we.
I come from an area down in Pasadena where they had this kind of housing in the 40s, and it was just about the way you described it, where you have maybe 4 residences facing each other on each side with the central walkway. They all walk to a covered parking spot that was away from the residence, but the intimacy that you're talking about was real, and it was palatable. I mean, it's different than living in a separate home on a regular suburban community. It's really quite unique because you do get a lot of community established between those that kind of living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but I did see a lot design here that looked like it's more like a military barracks where they just rows of houses that rail against them. I saw it showed up in our town, but they do exist. But Pasadena used these cottages as infill, like you're saying, Jenna. They would have regular lot sizes, which are smaller than we're talking about today, but they had single family homes, and then it'd be a group of cottages, 2 or 3, and mixed in with this lot. Like a Fort Walk area.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave a lot of interest to the living condition there, to have that. And my uncle and aunt lived in one of these, and they were, in fact, a 2-bedroom small, maybe 800 square feet. They had no children. They didn't intend to. They strictly wanted a nice place to live that was comfortable and safe. And other than that, they would spend their day out, or the evening out elsewhere, mm-hmm. when they come back for a cottage. Mm-hmm. So I understand that lifestyle. I understand. I've seen it. And I've lived in it.
Mm-hmm.
I've stayed with it when I visited. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean...
But they weren't big, like 1,700 square feet.
They were cottage, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple things as we walk through this that I have in my mind that I'm keeping. I definitely think you wouldn't want a zone that, and when I say that large, it's not that large, but, you know, it's still a big chunk of property, and you wouldn't want just all small homes built. Yeah, so when we look to the zone, I was really pleased that the council did see this being a mix. Because our code now allows a mix. We might change how that mix looks. But it does allow us to look at integrating single-family cottages and some attached duplex, triplex in together. The council, I think what's important that... they felt they wanted to maintain was that rural character that you see on Cedar Falls. So what I have done is we went out and did hire a consultant, and we've kind of taken what this memo that I gave you guys, that was what kind of the summary that I said to the council, this is what I've heard from you. And from this, we're going to now go back with a consultant and look at the area and actually look to see how we could provide a mix on a little more dialed in look at the land. And part of the discussion was tree retention of the trees along Cedar Falls to keep that kind of visual look. Polygon Cedar Falls neighborhood actually did a really good job doing that. If you're on Cedar Falls Way and you get to their entrance, that this is a good example of the lot sizes were smaller, so they exceeded the required park space, and a lot of that open space went to areas for tree preservation and things like that. But they could do that because they had excess land that they still got their unit count, so they were in excess of their required 5%. But you definitely don't feel the impact of that neighborhood on Cedar Falls because of that tree preservation. So that's important to maintain on the north side of the road. Then the other idea was, well, you know, that they really like the idea of where cottages are built, the clustering, true cottage feel, then meandering roads to connect maybe a neighborhood of single family and then another cottage, so kind of really mix it up so it doesn't feel like just the sea of sameness.
So
yeah.
My challenge goes back to my original sentiment that North Bend Way is our busiest street, and if I think 10, 20 years from now, will it be four lanes and center tree line landscape nicely, and exactly how would it feel to have a single family residence along that street? And I don't know that, you know, as a single-family homeowner, that's where I want to live. You know, I think multifamily, I think urban, but I'm not sure. So that's where my struggle is, blending cottage with single-family on two of the busiest main thoroughfares in our city. And I think Cedar Falls and North Bend Way are the two main conduits to go east and west. So I guess that's my thought of concern.
Well, that's a big concern. I would share that with you. I think that's a huge factor. These things work when there's not so much traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just thinking that my only real life experience was, in fact, it was a two-lane road, but a busy throughway in Pasadena. They had single streets and so on. But you didn't feel that there was a lot of traffic there because the bigger roads like Colorado Boulevard were more than that. They were basically like 66 feet streets, center line, parking on the curb, you know, that kind of thing. So you didn't have a lot of fast through traffic, but this is different. This is.
I think the speed will come down on North Bentway.
Well, when you get into the details, in which we will, you'll kind of see some of this works itself out. For example, North Bentway and these properties are actually separated by 100-foot Burlington Northern Railway right away. What we did in our previous cottage code, which worked beautifully, was we created an incentive where the developer could go out and buy the right-of-way and then deed back to us no less than 40 feet and absorb the rest into his development or her development and then build us Tanner Trail. So in theory, North Bend Way will always be separated by a 40-foot minimum Tanner Trail, and then
so all those lots that would border it will always be
a minimal
setback
of a park trail space. Mm-hmm. So that's nice on North Bend Way. And then actually when you get into details here, it's kind of cool because we have all of our properties. So this is all treed, and then you get this excess weird extra highway right away that we have. So this is all really nicely treed. So we're really looking at this stretch where these homes potentially could be up here. And what we're looking at is creating, we have the roadway. And then we actually have a sewer line. The ULAV sewer line is laid in there. And it's a 15-foot easement. And it's not landscaped very well. Right now it's just grassland swell. So you could really revegetate that to make that look and feel more of a buffer. And then you could even create another 15 feet where there'd be, so the property owner's frontage might only be a dedication of 15 feet, but you would retain a ton of significant trees in there or revegetate trees if they couldn't be saved. So there is a lot of opportunity on the corridor to buffer the neighborhoods, like you said.
When they're thinking about their duplex and triplex mix, are they getting any market data to show like how many duplex and triplexes are being built nowadays? I'm wondering if that's something of the 80s and maybe early 90s and now not so much, given what the millennial preference is.
That's a good question. There isn't a budget for this work.
I'm agreeing with a mix.
Yeah.
I'm not sure duplex triplex meets tomorrow's buyer.
Yeah. So we have not done an analysis of the market and what the market wants. I think what we have focused on more is not prohibiting the mix that we would be happy to see, and allowing the market to drive that based on the parameters that we're going to set through this process. So that's something to keep in mind, so you can keep it flexible enough for the upcoming market to provide what it is those people.
Shannon, this type of housing screams for light rail to be nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in your thought process to think about putting this type of housing closer to light rail, wherever that might be coming?
Well, I think that would be kind of along the lines of the 10 to 15 minute walk, because so I would say we definitely are looking at these units to be located in the best possible position for mobility. So we also think the fact that Tanner Trail is flat and a half mile bicycle or a walk into town from most of these, maybe it gets to about a mile at Mount Si Road. It's pretty reasonable.
Thinking about commuting, you know, for workers commuting from North Bend, mm-hmm. to Bellevue, Seattle, high speed light rail, that kind of thing.
I participated in the Sound Transit study that they invited people to take, and they sent me results of that. And the rail line is slated to go to Issaquah, but no further.
Yeah, that's no further. next 20 years as a pro out here.
It'd be the year 3000 by then.
Yeah, thanks, God.
I don't know if the population will meet that cost, right? And that's part of the need. But that said, if you take the commuter bus from North Bend to Seattle, it's not even an option for somebody that's working. It's, you know, over an hour and a half. It's not possible. But if you can take a bus from North Bend to Issaquah and drop, get on the train, that becomes more of a viable solution.
Okay.
So I hear what you're saying. To me, it's linking with mass transit, providing a local walkable solution at the same time.
I remember how I-90 was four lanes all the way from Issaquah all the way out. 20 years ahead of its time, I couldn't believe they put that much cement down with no population out here. They built for the future. I don't see why they wouldn't put light rail the same way, same category. It'll get used. It's cheaper to build it now than build it incrementally.
Yeah. I lived in L.A. when they built the train in Pasadena.
Yeah.
And it was before it was due and on budget and packed full every day.
Yeah.
It was just a marvel of how they did it.
Yeah.
But it's up to the staff. Back to our discussion, sorry.
That's okay. Well, I think...
I'm just thinking we should be thinking about that kind of thing, light rail transportation. Because I believe that North Bend is going to become quite an important community for that kind of resident.
Yeah.
A commuter resident.
How can we start a discussion with Sound Transit to invite that?
Well, that's a good question. We probably need to hire somebody. At least some more people. Oh, a few more.
Note to Londi.
I think, you know, as your planning director, I go to regional things. I'm always, you know, looking out for or putting forth something of that, you know, if it's feasible. Right now, it's not in the plans to come out here. I think it would be a tough effort at this point in time to start, you know, pushing that on that direction at this point in time. I mean, right now we're just, you know, I don't know if you've seen the PSRC recent information that's come out about just how they're treating the small cities in our comp plans. But basically what they're saying is we're growing too fast. And it really comes down to transportation grant dollars. And where those grant dollars will most be in their mind, there's a bigger bang for your buck in the bigger cities.
I see this as a different discussion because I'm going to go to them and say, we have the largest national forest within 2 million people who you could charge to come visit this forest.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that's a viable business opportunity? And at the same time, we have our residents who can commute back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something to be had. Okay.
Yeah.
Off topic.
So kind of back to the cottages, what tonight's more of a get you guys in the know that the council's been looking at vision. Their vision is to create a mixed zone similar to, you know, it doesn't seem to be drastically different in the typology of housing that we're talking about. Definitely looking to make some changes. So any cottage product that's going to be developed, I think the council's leaning towards bringing forth having a code that you guys are going to consider. And oh, sorry guys. Hey. To have one that mimics more of the Kirkland from a cottage standpoint. And then the details on tree preservation and really trying to keep that rural atmosphere will be all wrapped into that.
Is there, you know, I love that we have 50 and 75-year-old trees, but do we have an opportunity for re-landscaped you know, when those trees are not healthy, or you know, younger trees which will have more branch, I don't know what screening, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. where some of the tall Douglas firs offer no screening. So I would just think about it aesthetically. You know, we have a choice to mix and mm-hmm. you know, big leaf maples or something like that that are native to the area.
Our landscape code for any revegetation area does require the mix. I think that one thing about having some of the tall trees retained is definitely it provides that vertical balance to, like, when I go to places that did not retain trees, even up on Suquamish Ridge, you know, you definitely see the houses because you don't have that break in verticality. So I think that
there's value. I'm just saying,
yeah,
you know,
there's
do you
both.
Have to have the entire 400 foot width of it, or can you mix and mingle?
You could definitely mix and mingle. I mean, you can. We're re-looking at the code, so the code's open. I'm sharing with you where the council is. We're going to bring forth a code as a starting point based on their input for you to consider and provide a recommendation. That will include tree preservation. You know, I was talking about that 15-foot sewer easement. Right now, it's grassline swell. Well, that's a maintenance issue. That could all be revegetated with native vegetation, shrubs that get to about 10 to 15 feet and provide a pretty nice low-maintenance buffer as part of frontage improvements. And, you know, so there's definitely different ways to accomplish what we want to do. As you drive out Cedar Falls, look at that first, the little trail that the city built on, as you leave the roundabout and you go down Cedar Falls, there's an asphalt trail and it's separated by kind of a swale. There is an interest of having, you know, instead of doing formal curb gutter sidewalk on Cedar Falls, meandering a trail, especially through the trees and on that side of the road. So that's one of the looks that street might end up getting versus the formal, more urban look.
Would they be wider so it's good for bikes? And
yeah, our trail standard is 8 or 10 feet. I think it's 8.
It's 8. I think it's 8 paved.
It's 8 paved in the
total.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. When I walked that street, 12.
It's 12, but I think it's 8 paved.
Wow. That's enough for both sides.
Mm-hmm. But based on our density, yes. Yeah. If it was a denser area, we'd go 10 for sure.
Cedar Falls really doesn't feel safe to me to walk on a trail. It doesn't feel safe.
Well, it'd be a trail off the street.
But even so, it just seems like the traffic's too fast and the lane's too narrow. It doesn't feel safe to be a walking trail, particularly for kids. Things like that, they play around and goof off. That's all kids do.
Amazing what some cities and counties permit. I'll just keep that to myself. Sorry.
So so for now, what we are right now looking at is bringing kind of, it's not an overlay, because Rob will have something to say about that, but it is a site design look at that corridor and really dialing in the site design parameters that we want as basics. Like, we know we want, if we're going to have access to those parcels, we'd like them to line up with Salish Avenue and La Forest and La Forest. There's three main intersections that we'd want to line. That would be one of the design parameters. One of the design parameters might be tree preservation or revegetation. So anyway, that's going to be at council next Tuesday. Depending on where I get with them on that, you're either going to see it at your next planning commission or the following one. I'll be honest with you, to turn around and get a code written in a week and a half, it won't be complete. So I'll have to see where we can bring the starting point, but it won't be a finished product. So I might not even get into code yet, more maybe just the site planning parameters that the, you know, more of this kind of exercise. So really start thinking about that area as you drive through and what, you know, what you see. I'll send that missing middle article what you see as your housing mix that feels appropriate, feels right for that corridor. And then we'll have a good discussion.
Yeah, I will have to drive that specific area. But I like this commons one.
Uh-huh.
I looked at, and they have a native growth protection area that they put in. And it, I think that's one that I Googled, and it, I think that was like a 5-acre preserve, so maybe likely a little unusual, but possible. So that is something, and maybe if it was only an acre, but you know, that I think from what I heard from what you said about the council, what I would like in this area to keep that rural feel, and the community would be on this Redmond one, you know, all these homes that are sold, they're in blue, you know, and so it's a kind of like a horseshoe. So in the middle of that horseshoe, I think they have a green or a common area, but then on the outside is the native existing forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so keeping as much of that as you know, as to keep with the vision or as possible, or if you want. I mean, the only thing I see in here, and I don't know if it relates to this North Bend Cottage open space requirement, and it says for each, I don't know if it's for each cottage housing on site, a minimum of 436 square feet of common open space per unit. I don't know if that pertains to it, if that's a way to kind of add it up, but you know, that number could be increased so that we have more open space for native, you know, if that already is good, if native existing forest, then keep it that way in large chunks.
So I just want to ask Commissioner Heller, like, are you familiar with what the native growth protection easement means to that land?
To this one, Redmond?
Yeah. Typically, that means you don't enter, you don't remove trees, you don't do anything. It's not usable space. It's protected from everything.
It's open space. It's not developable.
But you're not supposed to trample vegetation.
Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly what this is, but
so I like where it's open space.
Yeah.
It's usable, or you can do a trail through there,
The
kids could go build a fort.
I don't know what's near your house. That is kind of weird, that situation, but that's not what, I don't know if that's how this is, but that's not what I would intend either. It's just, it's not developable, but you can walk in there and do whatever you want in there, you know.
I'll just ask, if that's more to our code, is that what we're saying by open space requirements? Can we retain vegetation in our open space but still allow it to be usable? I think that's what he's asking.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The goal would be, for example, we have the parks and open space requirement that you just mentioned, and then we have other parameters that says you got to put these play equipment or that. Well, maybe in this section we say no play equipment's needed. Instead, trails, picnic tables, and more of a natural park versus a active play park.
And retain a percentage of canopy, 20% or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of it, that you could do the natural park in that community center or something, whatever they do, like in the center of that horseshoe. They all seem to be in horseshoes. But in addition, there would be, I don't know the size, but a surrounding forest. So
that would be like a buffer, right?
Yeah, and not just like a thin strip or something, but you know, like is potentially a significant part of the property. So that's just something too that would assist in keeping that rural feel.
I would say that would make sense when you're in a zone versus infill, right?
Yeah.
That you could do a 40-foot buffer on.
And primarily, if there's already good forest, that would be the reason to do it. If not, then
in your background, Scott, you might agree with me there ought to be a heavy emphasis on fire-wise maintenance around those kind of vegetated communities, because just for natural fire suppression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all part of what would be designed into it, yeah. I think, I don't know exactly what this is, but I do recall a discussion on it, and I think it's either a steep slope area. It was an unbuildable area that became put into a native protection easement, which most native protection easements and even wetland buffers and things, you can build trails in. But in this scenario, one thing that will be, right now we have its own 6 to 10 DUs per acre. All of these, you'll kind of notice, hit around 8. And I think that's kind of a magic number from my experience, even on Snoqualmie Ridge with some of the, like, Baker Street cottages. It really, once you put parking and access and an open space, you really, it's really hard to get to that. You're in that 8. So I've been wrestling with this question too, because if we want buffers and we want tree preservation and we want open space, but we want cottages in density and we don't want to downzone people, we have to be comfortable with, well, allowing the density to happen here to protect some space over here. So that is one thing that's making this effort, I think, a little challenging, is trying to balance all the competing desires.
I hear what you're saying on density, and it would be fine to do 8, but when I look at these projects, they're an acre and a half, where we have 5 and 10 properties, then it's going to be a different look and feel.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's some way in code that we want to take that diversity in cottage and put the mix in. That's more prescriptive.
I think right now where the discussion is going to start on Tuesday with the council would be that they've expressed an interest that the Kirkland Code requires cottage clusters not to exceed 12 per cluster, and not more than 2 clusters to without separation from another 2. So you would never have more than 24 cottage homes together without being separated by something. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, implying that there, that means we could have 24 cottage here, and then maybe we're separated by a 50 to 100 foot buffer versus a bunch of, in Kirkland, it's a bunch of other single family homes. Or maybe it's cottages, then it's single family homes with some buffers, and then it's cottages again.
Yeah.
So those are all like the brainstorming, that we're going to be having. So be thinking about that.
What about builder advice?
Well, it depends on the builder you're talking about. This is going to be a unique cottage. Is a product that is not readily,
in terms of cost efficiency, building something like that where you have some cottages, some single families, some cottages, or would your builder be pressuring you to put more cottages together than you're talking about?
Typically, builders want to build their product and not have to then, break down and then set up again, 1,000 feet down the road to build the same product. They want to just build them out. But depending,
I think that's what I like. What you're saying is just that if it is 1,000 feet or less, over, and you have this, like this Redmond one, and maybe it wouldn't be. This wouldn't be 5 acres. This isn't a scale, but you can't from this little community that you tuck in that it's surrounded by 3 sides. Maybe you can't see line of sight, through the trees to the next one. But then there's another cluster like that, and if it was these little pockets that are carved out along the forest, I don't know how it would look on the land, but that would be, in something that had a single driveway and maybe it's set back a little bit before the cottages start. So as you drive down Cedar Fall away, you wouldn't even know cottages were inside there, but then there's this whole little community in there. And then once you're in there, you can't see the next one. So from what you've said about the council and from what I think of it, that's kind of my vision of it, but that's just...
Yeah, so the trick will be writing a code that can be economically built yet still meet the vision. Because I think right now, more builders are leaning towards smaller houses just because they're lands can be coming, not so much in North Bend. We still had some land available. But elsewhere, things are getting to be a little bit more difficult to find. So for example, builders are now looking at products of developments of 12 to 20 homes, whereas before, the larger ones wouldn't look at anything under, you know, X number. And it was much higher than
X cubed.
12 or 24. So, you know, we'll see. We'll have public hearings, and I'm sure we'll hear from some of the builders on it.
Sheila, has there been any recent talk about the little tiny home?
The tiny, tiny home.
The tiny, tiny ones.
Not yet in requiring it to, you know, right now the council has talked about a cottage in their mind is 1,500 square feet or less. Not necessarily you can build those.
Okay.
So the market right now, if somebody wanted to build a 500 square foot home, you could.
Okay.
The smaller the footprint, typically the more expensive square foot. Mm-hmm. So it naturally seems to get bigger, just, you know, to meet the needs, but you could build that, at least by the way the codes are written now. Like, you could buy a little lot in town and build 200 square foot home if you want.
Okay. Thank you.
You mentioned the Puget Sound Regional Council had made a comment or published something. Is that available on their site?
Oh, you can look at Seattle Times. There's a little article in the paper. Basically, what's happened is all the small cities, including us, got our comprehensive plans conditionally certified. And what they're saying to us is we are exceeding our growth targets, and we need to go back into our land use chapter and evaluate our land use to align it more with the growth targets.
Jenna, 10 years ago, how different was our growth target from today?
Not very different. I don't know the exact number, but it was negligible the last time it went up. I kind of went, oh, okay. I mean, it was like
a couple hundred.
Yeah, if that. It was nothing. But I think the key to this is we're required to plan under GMA. GMA clearly has a couple key elements, and that is you want to encourage urban density into cities where services are available and can easily be extended to or provided. GMA wanted cities and counties to have local control with a regional coordinated planning effort. As part of GMA, buildable lands was an amendment that happened in like 97 that created an evaluation process. And the evaluation process was about ensuring cities actually were planning to accommodate urban densities, not to restrict it. So the targets were created to say, hey, you have to plan for this number. You can't plan below it. So it was set as a floor. In 2012, we had our transportation element certified by PSRC with higher population capacity, because we've downzoned in the meantime, higher employment capacity, or maybe employment was about the same. And now, after we went through 4 years of the work you guys did, sending them drafts, they come back to all the little cities and say, hey, you know what, you're growing too fast, you need to reevaluate your land use and your zoning to bring it more in line with the targets. Kind of insinuating the target now is a ceiling, not a floor. Well, that's in conflict with Growth Management Act, plain and simple, because our target is so low, we would be at like 2.5 DUs per acre.
Wouldn't it make more sense for the Puget Sound Regional Council to look at what the growth is of all the cities and what our projections are and then to plan based on that capacity instead of telling us how we should grow or what we should be doing?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, PSRC is a transportation-oriented organization that doles out money, so really doesn't have the authority to be asking cities to either downzone or adjust, especially when we're planning. You know, we've done some pretty good. When I went through and made a list of all the strategic planning things North Bend has done, you know, I mean, we've bought 500 acres of otherwise developable industrial properties that would have just upped our employment capacity even more. We've downzoned since 2006. You know, all that yellow was 6 to 8 DUs per acre. So, anyway, long story short, there's going to be a lot coming out about what's next on the radar for the comp plans. But I think most of us small cities are in the same place, that it's an overstep of the role.
Interesting.
Yeah. So back to our issue at hand, I think tonight was more of a, hey, the council's really taking this seriously. They've really dug in. They have given some good direction, which you've gotten. They're going to be taking it up again to give final direction. And from that direction, we're going to go put together a proposed code revision for you guys to consider. And that will be probably, you know, we'll start probably next meeting and then start really diving into code the following meeting.
Well, I want to say thank you very much for putting this together for us, because it is very helpful to understand what's coming and where it's coming from and why it's coming.
Absolutely, and I will send you that missing middle article. Otherwise, that's it.
Yeah. I'll do this. July
14th. Okay.
Did you get that? We're in
Denver. Oh, I will. I'll just miss the next week.
Okay. Well, I think we are at good of the order.
Staff install some tap beers.
That's a good point. I have actually enjoyed the music, I have to say.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Anything else for good of the order? Yes, I am thirsty. Okay. Shall we pass out the maps that you had?
Sure, just for more information, Dan.
I love these maps.
I love the fact Mary brought them. I love it. Thanks, Mary. You're hired. She's a communications specialist.
Thanks, Mary.
No, thank you.
And,
I everybody's open to that kind of information coming our way. And it's I'm going to be going down at Kirkland to go into that one of those locations tomorrow. So
okay. Good.
I'll come back with some.
Yeah, take some pictures and yeah.
It's a good idea to go drive a couple of those. Our only cottage project in town has been grading. Are they going to start building anytime soon?
I do believe they are going to be going vertical soon. Somebody else might know more.
Vertical. With a little help from city staff, we would be able to do that.
Well, with that, I'll entertain.
Our goal is to be final platted and therefore starting home building in September.
September.
So you can't be struggling with getting there.
All right. So then it'd be better for us to drive. Yeah. Okay, motion to adjourn.
Will we adjourn?
Motion by Commissioner Ryan. Second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Heller. All those in favor of adjourning, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned 8:17.
8:17.